Necro, Sargis, and Gary with us this particular evening. So much around the world to talk about. It's almost impossible to say where do we start, because it doesn't matter where we are. There's a lot of chaos going around the world. But the Lieutenant Colonel, retired Lieutenant Colonel, has been in world affairs for most of his life, and has a unique understanding of what's going on and a unique opinion that's not often viewed on Fox or MSNBC or CNN. But it's a very important opinion and probably gives you a little bit more depth of scope than what you would find on those particular networks. And before we go to the Lieutenant Colonel, got to say shout out to Mary Brockman in the chat room. Love you dearly. Smooches to you. Mary Brockman is my bouncer in chief. If you diss her, you diss me, you will be dismissed from our program. Lieutenant Colonel, we woke up this morning and what we found were peaceful protestations in Hong Kong that had all of a sudden jump started into violent unrest, including the taking over of public utility, in this particular case, Subway. I got to ask you here, sir, is this what we all expected, or is this a shock and awe moment for many of us?
Well, it depends on your perspective, because civil unrest always does follow initial disobedience. The question is, what is China going to do? I was asked recently, is China going to go ahead and enter Hong Kong? And I said I would be surprised if they didn't. But the problem for China is that Hong Kong was used years ago as a staging area for Chinese leadership to bomb their money to other countries, in this case, in support of not only the strategic aims of China, but for protection of the leadership. So as an example, today I'm actually, we just finished a conference that I was here speaking on a panel, which was an ACAM conference, a third annual conference. We looked at the financial institution and law enforcement collaboration. And part of the discussion that I had for my piece was on how, you know, the whole wallet system was used, non-traditional banking systems, and some of the things that China did in the past. You know, Chinese leadership realized that they wanted to have a good relationship as far as money being, you know, utilized overseas for their advantages. They went ahead and got the slave labor or prison labor to work on those requirements of whatever that commodity was. They got a sanction through the state-owned businesses, made money for those state-owned businesses, but laundered it through Hong Kong, through American businesses who were negotiating for legitimate market value on those commodities in order to be able to move that money directly into the United States. They did it through multiple menus. It gave them an opportunity not to just have an effect in the United States in the long run politically, but it gave them an opportunity at the same time to be able to move money to where they believe it was much more safer if China could not sustain itself. So the problems you run into today with what is China dealing with economically, with the president putting tariffs on against them, is that because a lot of the Chinese money was laundered through Hong Kong directly to the United States, every time the U.S. economy is hurt, China takes a double barrel shotgun to its chest.
Wow.
Frankly, their dollars are invested outside more than inside. The problem that U.S. has in this case is that, let's take an example, Huawei. Huawei, if We say we cannot sanction Huawei because we know it's working for the interests of the Chinese government and the Chinese military. And we say we're not going to buy Huawei phones. Huawei can always turn around and go find a cheaper market where it can maybe buy the eaches, in this case, let's say the screen for his phone, and sell it. If China says tomorrow that, well, we're not going to buy any iPhones, whereas the U.S. manufacturing did not look for a cheaper screen, it can't. We don't have those bases. Those are in Southeast Asia, which we don't really have the market developed yet. So that means our items would go double, triple, as far as the market is concerned. These migrations, these internal fights, are what is the reason that Hong Kong currently is basically being pushed apart. Mm-hmm. Because these fights that the big elephants are having, in this case China and the United States, is the dramatic infestation of what you see happening in Hong Kong with
Donald S. Yeah, now, see, I am so glad that we have Lieutenant Colonel Sangari on with us tonight, because that's not what we're hearing on Fox 5, Fox News and MSNBC. This is what we're hearing. And it's probably somewhat true, but I think overly stated. This is what we're hearing. That the reason why these protestations are going on and becoming violent is because Hong Kong is getting closer and closer to melting into the one China system, capitalism being supplanted by communism, and literally the people of Hong Kong don't want to lose their rights and their freedoms and their liberties, and they want to separate from China again. That's what we're hearing. But what you're saying to us is that there is another unique situation that's going on that has nothing to do with the protesters, but may be the reason why the protesters feel it necessary to hit the streets. China versus the United States in this tariff war. And while China, while the U.S. may suffer the cold, it seems that China will be getting a terminal flu. And yet there are concerns about what we can do in terms of technology. Am I correct?
Look, that's correct. I mean, I'll give you an example. I'll give an example that can tie into Hong Kong. Let me take you to Iran for 1 second.
Yes.
And I know that you're going to ask about it. Let me kind of take you to Iran and you'll see where the link analysis takes place. It's one thing that Near East does. So we went ahead and put sanctions against Iran. Yet after we put sanctions against Iran under the current administration, we kept the port of Chabahar, which is in Iran, open in order for India to do business with Iran, to develop the port in order to put a rail line in that runs into Afghanistan. Why did we do that? Because we needed India to be a buffer against China.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, at the same time we did that, it's not just a population buffer, a military buffer, which if you go back 4 years ago, we started refurbishing the Indian military for brand new weapons in this fight. So 4 years ago, we began doing this. Now, by allowing that to happen, that the railhead to be opened from the ports of Iran into Afghanistan, we were able to put pressure on Pakistan to put pressure on the Taliban to have the Taliban come to the negotiation tables. Why are we interested in trying to put this pressure on Pakistan to put pressure on the Taliban so that India can eventually be able to use whatever it wants to transport into Afghanistan for U.S. strategic interests?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, India has the cheap labor population capability to be able to transport what China is sitting on in Afghanistan, which is precious stones. Most of those precious stones and gems are developed and sold out of Hong Kong, and they're a very big profit-making center. Chinese government, for their wants and desires of how they want to expand their footprint, really use those type of precious stones as a means and ways of laundering the money that they need, whether it be in Europe or in the United States, to get a strategic advantage for themselves and manipulate currency. So what Hong Kong is dealing with today is the fact initially Hong Kong was used when we tried to open up the doors to China for building up China to be a buffer against Russia as a hub of all these economic interests that are what is the driver behind the Two Belt Initiative as far as the Chinese are concerned and what they want to do as far as protecting Europe, which is the reason why the Europeans are fucking against us when it comes to England, France, and Germany, when it comes to our interests of how we want to affect Iran and the future of those bazaars going forward. The world, as big as it might seem, is very small, very tied together, and it is really the economy that is really squeezing what is happening in Hong Kong. Not to say that the individual who's living in Hong Kong, who was raised there, who has now made himself or herself a profit center, who's a professional, who has grown up knowing that, look, I'm making a good living, I live a good life, I don't want to have some dictator in front of me what I need to do and how I need to do it, is not actually out there protesting for those reasons. But the underlying current that that protester might not see is really tied to the economic maturations of how the world economy is trying to jockey what the future as far as these two juggernauts is going to be when it comes to the next 50 years, even if you want to call it over the next decade.
Oh my goodness! You know I gotta have you come back next week if we can make that arrangement. Because oh my God! See, this is why I love the Lieutenant Colonel coming on the program, because this is not the stuff that you're hearing a Stuart Varney talk about, or any of the other guys on the networks talk about. They're not talking about it's not just two dimensional here. This is a multidimensional process where, I mean, if you step the wrong way, that butterfly is going to cause a tornado somewhere in the world. It really works in that particular fashion. And I wanted to talk with you about Iran. So I'm going to hold off and I'm going to try to get you to come back next week on Iran. But I want to talk with you about the State Department. And apparently, the no-Trumpers, or those who are antithetical to the Trump foreign policy, are working feverishly to get rid of those individuals who have been put in place to do the Trump foreign policy. And I want to ask you, is that the right story that we're getting regarding the State Department? Or if it's not right, why are we getting it? If it is right, what will it take to clean out the swamp of the State Department?
Ken, there's always issues within any type of an organization. I've had family members who literally worked in, not at State Department, but worked at just a local convenience store. They used to come in and have issues with their co-workers.
Mm-hmm.
That exists. Now, the problem we have is when you're looking at the State Department, one of the things that we do in U.S. history, which is unique only to the United States, is that not only do we have career foreign service officers, and it takes a long time to develop some of those folks.
Mm-hmm.
But we actually have multiple appointees. So every administration that comes in with somebody in charge as a multiple appointee. The problem is that you could be the smartest, most brightest person. You may have read a lot of books, have a lot of different knowledge as to a particular region. But when I put you as a political appointee, you have those on staff. There's certain ways that the system operates. And a lot of these people don't understand how these bureaucracies operate. So you could have somebody who's ran an oil company before walks into a State Department and has absolutely no clue why the State Department operates the way it does. And then now you talk about the issues of political appointees. You're talking about foreign service officers, how they operate, how they're trained, where is their structure within that food chain. And you realize, given the numbers, the operating budget, that, you know, they're not just structured to handle some of the issues that we have to deal with today in today's world. So when we have issues in Iraq, as an example recently, where the Iraqis are saying that U.S. cannot fly over our territory anymore, well, State Department has to fix it. When you're talking about what's happening in Hong Kong, State Department has to fix it. When you talk about narco trafficking coming through the South, State Department, you have to fix it. But you have to be able to put people that are capable of fixing that within a system structure that you can do it. Let me tell you as an example what happens. I am a State Department lead. I may be an individual who's there who really doesn't know how the system operates. Well, my junior knows how it operates, so I keep the junior close to me to make sure that the junior is the one who pushes me through the process so I get the credit for what the junior does. At the same time, the junior is a person who's supposed to replace me in the future, so the junior, for them to be able to get a future promotion, they have to make sure that they're able to take my position. The problem in a military structure, you could have leaders who train their younger soldiers, and the way we evaluate our general officers is by saying that this so-called colonel, this individual came from this branch. He's the one who trained them.
Yeah.
The problem with State Department is they both kind of move through the process together because they're so tied to needing each other that when it comes to the decision-making process to resolve some of the most complicated issues that exist on the globe, that neither of them wants to make the other one look bad. But in the process, nobody's willing to say, hey, you're screwing up this
thing. Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
They're not willing to do that internally, so you're screwing up, then what? Now, you have an administration, they change it. So you got president who comes and says, you helped me out on my campaign trail. Now I'm going to put you in charge of this particular department and State Department as a deputy. And a guy walks in, and the individual doesn't even know how to simply just basically get his health insurance going in the right direction. Because there's some pieces of papers that you have to follow in bureaucracy, get certain things done to ensure that you are actually part of that chain. Has no clue how to read your reports, doesn't know how to digest things, doesn't know how to actually look at bottom lines up front. So in this process, you get political appointees who are lost, but they're political appointees. And they're put there, and then as soon as the next administration comes, they replace them. But I'll give you an example. The last election that we had in the United States, I actually ran as a Republican in the 9th Congressional District of Illinois. The reason I ran, because I met with an undersecretary who was told by the National Security Council, after I met with the National Security Council, that you have to go to Chicago, Illinois, and you have to meet with Colonel Sangiri one-on-one. And when the undersecretary came and said, why do I have to come meet with you? I said, because of a document that U.S. systems were working on for 6 years, and they were trying to get an agreement. Well, over one weekend, we went down to Iraq, we sat down, and less than 3 days, we were able to put it together, get all the political parties to sign it. That document was given to you. Why is it that 6 months later you don't know what that document there is and you have never read it?
Wow.
6 years of individuals sacrificing downrange, and the person has no process that that report has a reporting requirements to it. And then 2 years later, after that meeting, I get told that the U.S. wasn't ready for it. Well, why isn't the U.S. State Department ready for it? As I told the deputy at that time, and I would tell anyone who works at the State Department, as I was asked by one young man who wanted to pursue a Foreign Service career position, I said, you have to know everything about everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's my advice to you. And if you don't know it, then don't be a global leader.
There you go.
So that's the reality. And unfortunately, this is what we run. This is what we deal with. So out of the frustration on that day, I decided to run. We ran for 5 months, basically. We got folks 8 months of votes. That's why today the Republicans bring pressure on me to maybe look at running again this year's election. But what ends up happening, Ken, I've realized that the years of working in these bureaucracies, it has nothing to do about your authority. It has nothing to do about who you are, what position you hold. It really has to do at the bottom, at the heart of it. You're a good person, you'll do good stuff at the lower levels and higher levels. You're a bad person, you'll do bad stuff at the lower levels and higher levels. And there's really the human character. And then that's why sometimes in these bureaucracies you get individuals really that are looking strong in character, they're able to push his train. President Trump came in and realized that this is how these bureaucracies operate. He's trying to fix it. The problem is you're trying to unscrew a system that was screwed together and is not tied together based on how U.S. code is written, what legislation is out there, and it sometimes takes decades to fix a problem that was, to you, might be minor when it comes to these type of bureaucracies. I'm not sure if that helps.
No, that is, oh my God, that is so enlightening. Literally, the smart's going to be there a while. It's just going to be there. You can't help it. What would be the one, if we could get rid of career bureaucrats, would that solve the problem, or would we have a worse problem?
Yes and no. That career bureaucrat has to report to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I told you I ran a couple of years ago. Okay, so let's look at Congress. We're in the 116th Congress right now. In November of this past year, there was it was over, and whoever was elected to Congress was elected to Congress. January 10th, the Illinois Republicans had a breakfast. I believe it was January 10th, I could be off on the date, but I was at that breakfast, and we were talking about how we can possibly run the 2020 election and beat the Democrats that are in Illinois, it's 13 congressional seats when it comes to the 2020 election. Now, okay, we're talking about the fact that elections were just held on 5 November. You have a brand new Congress who's gone to what is called a farm to sit there and be given their marching orders, but they're selected. Career politicians from their parties, in this case Republicans and Democrats. While they haven't even sat in that seat to get that briefing, the other party, in this case for us Republicans, and I'm sure the Democrats are doing it in other cases, in other cities and states, is planning on how to run against you. Now, February was when the government was barely open. Mm-hmm. What happens once it's open, the new Congress people, congresspersons, go to what is called a farm. They're basically told, here's the bills that are going to be in this first half of the calendar for the congressional year 116. And this is what you're going to sit on and this is what's going to happen. And if you say, well, I don't want to co-sign on that bill, too bad. It's already, your name is on it. It's a committee you've been selected because the leadership told you where you go sit. Now, imagine while they're going through this, basically realizing that it doesn't matter, they're under the gun already. You have the other party already a month prior has had a meeting, they'll have to defeat you in the next election. The first quarter of filing for financial reports are in the April of this past year, and you haven't even yet sat on a committee to try to pass a bill. And some of these Congress people that come in don't even know that on the day you show up on 1 January, you have to have the entire calendar filled through the entire year to include what's going to happen in 2020. So Congress meets, they finally get together, the president delivers the State of the Union address. There's possible money for certain programs and projects that even on both sides of the aisle, they stand up and clap for when it comes to the president's speech at the State of the Union.
Mm-hmm.
That might then possibly authorize for the use of those programs, meaning they may not even get allocated. So you have possible monies for a program that you might have put your name on to be a co-signer on a bill that's going to be going through committees, but you're not even sure if you're going to get money that is going to be authorized to be spent on that particular program. Come August, there's already two quarters of filing by the person who's running against you. You're in the middle of recess. The second half of this congressional calendar, 116, has no loyalty to the previous congressional calendar when it comes to the dollars that have to be allocated, because at the end of the day, Congress can only do four things. Give money for something, take money away from something, make something legal or illegal. And this entire process, you have the public opinion under the mass media just bashing each other, trying to get stage setter for possibly how and what the talking point should be to try to defeat the current party that is in power, for being Congress and the Senate under the executive branch. Come 3 September is when, really, if I'm not mistaken, by the Illinois requirements, you have to start collecting signatures in order to be able to get on the ballot, in order to be able to run in a primary in March of next year for Illinois. So here's a brand new congressperson that came in. They haven't done anything. They've been told what to do. They don't have a capacity or capability to fight against the leadership. And already they're out there trying to collect signatures in order to get on the ballot to be able to win their primary.
Wow.
And possibly be the president of the party running against. Now, these individuals are where the Secretary of State has to go sit in front of them, in front of committees, and advocate for the budget that is required for them to be able to run what we call function budget $150, and everything that goes with it, we kind of call Title 22, what we call multi sales and everything else, to be able to usher what's happening in Taiwan, in Iran, in Iraq, strike a nuclear deal, ensure that the Europeans are not blocking against our sanctions, and ensure that we can get at least a treaty struck when it comes just to auto parts between the United States and Mexico. And guess what? They're smaller numbers. We survive on sheer miracles in this country. I honestly believe that if it wasn't for God's providence, there's no way this country would have survived this long.
Wow. No one on my network has ever heard this breakdown. Lieutenant Colonel, we got to get you to come back next week because I want to talk with you about Iran. Tell people how they can get this type of in-depth, knowledge-driven information about world policy, about foreign policy.
Well, I don't know if you're going to get this one on the Near East, or my own site, but this one was for you, kids, because You know, I mean, I'm in D.C. today, and I can see some of the frustrations that folks are dealing with here. But to really look at how we focus and look at world politics, you can go to the Near East Center for strategic engagement. We're on Twitter. Take a look. Take a look at the op-eds recently written for the Daily Herald. And maybe in the future, as I've been asked, maybe we will start providing some articles on how D.C. works. And if you haven't asked about how to team up the issues with the State Department, you would have never heard this. So it was your question that it drove the answer I gave you. But we may write it in the future because it might be helpful for people to understand why sometimes we seem as disorganized as we are when it comes to our foreign policy. The other piece is with United of City Field. That's the only way we get any funds raised to be able to help the Assyrian Christians and also be able to have a functional budget to do some of the stuff we do in support of our strategic games to be able to keep the Rite of Christianity alive in the Middle East. And that's just means a way that people can help us to sustain us, to give us the opportunity to be able to provide this type of information from an educational perspective for anyone who's interested.
Wow. Listen, I also, after hours, I'll send a note to you because I want your blog to be on our Voice of Liberty page for TECN-TV. This type of information is definitely not proffered on most television networks to date. You're just not going to find it. No one's talking about all this. It's just the basic bullet points, protests, you know, Iran's the enemy, all that kind of stuff. No one's really breaking down the miracle of the U.S. government the way you have. And I really appreciate you being on tonight. God bless you, sir. And I look forward to following up with you in the after hours in terms of how we can get that information on our blog system.
Thank you, Duncan. And really, for shows like you, voices like you that give us an opportunity to be able to answer these questions. And like I said, if you had never asked the question, you would have never heard the answer.
Never would have heard.
To have shows like you out there.
Thank you so much. God bless you, sir.